Nasty. They were called nasties and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen a video, mister. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.
And welcome back to another episode of Doing the Nasty Podcast. This is season 2, episode number 34. I'm one of your hosts, Duncan McLeish. Joining me, he is not hungover. That would never happen. Not on a day he would be recording. He's not been inhaling the fumes of burned bones. He wouldn't do that. Never on a weekend.
Burning cardboard, more like.
Cardboard bones. Is, of course, my good buddy, Mr. Mark Ball. How you doing?
I am here. I would never, ever, how dare you, sir, insinuate that I would ever do a podcast intoxicated in any way, shape, or form. That has never happened in the 12 years I've podcasted.
I quantify by saying that you would never do that. You would never do that, Mark.
No, yeah, I was the best man of my wedding's birthday this week, so we had a little backyard campfire last night, and I was like, as soon as I got there, I'm like, I can't be over here super duper late. I got two shows to record with Duncan in the morning. I don't know what the time change did. I think we're recording an hour later than we usually do.
Yeah, next, the clocks change here end of the month. So at that point, all wrongs will be wrought. So
that's
but
right.
Until then, it's still all upside down.
It's good for me. It's the 1 month of the year where it's an hour later than we usually record your time, basically. That's shit. I'm trying to keep track of all that. It's been a little while. We
arranged one that I forgot about, then we arranged another one, and I was at Fright Fest, and it was the day after Fright Fest, and then we arranged this one. So we are here, and we're recording two back-to-back, and they are going out pretty much 1 week apart, so everyone will be caught up to where they should be in about 2 weeks' time, and then that will allow us to get back on track!
A little peek behind the curtain. There's nothing in either of these two episodes that is like... I'm like kicking open listeners' doors, being like, you've got to hear this fucking episode and hear about this movie. One of these movies...
Yeah,
talked about.
Yeah, none of these movies are good, dude. Like, let's be like, none of these movies. Yeah. One of them's in the next episode, one of them is a Pleat Sateshi movie, which is a genre that I love at the moment. And even then, the movie's kind of middling. So, not that I'm saying listen to this episode and download the next one. Please do that. But yeah,
there's good things in most of these movies. They may not be good movies, but there are good elements, and there's definitely some stuff to talk about with these. So yeah, don't shut the podcast off. You just got here. Yeah. Hang out for a little while.
Mark dragged himself out of bed hungover to do that. I mean, sorry, Mark would never drag himself out of bed hungover because he would never drink before a record. How you doing, man? Out with the headache.
It's been interesting still going to school. Nice. I hate the fucking psychology class that I'm taking. It's so goddamn boring and shit that I'm not interested in, but I'm still skating by with a B in that fucker.
Cool.
It's been an interesting couple of months. This is the brokest I've ever been in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to thinking about it, and I was like, you know, like about 15-ish, maybe close to 20 years ago when I was working at a television station and I was a fucking show director, I was making about pretty close to half of what I make now. I think I was making like $7.85 when I topped out at that fucking place, and that seemed great, but I was still just like barely skating by in life. I am now making double that amount of money 15 years ago, and once again, barely fucking skating by, so... Thanks a lot, fucking inflation. But no, I don't know. My current job, like I like it a lot. It is super not stressful. I kind of told the people that hired me, I was like, I have got to get away from jobs that are gonna kill me with fucking stress.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I take a massive fucking pay cut. I need a more low key job, and that's exactly what this job is. I get a shit ton of time to listen to podcasts and listen to music and stuff. So yeah, I'm usually pretty well caught up on like your stuff. And
I didn't know this. I've dramatically reduced my content this year. So had I known this, Mark, I'd be putting out more stuff.
Well, as long as, you know, like, I think once a week is kind of the main standard. And yeah, last year you were putting out like shit, you know, parts of the year you were putting out stuff every single fucking day. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we
you
worked
could only
out,
slow down from
yeah,
that.
We worked out that by the end of the year, I had put out more episodes of the podcast Under Stairs than any year. To quantify that even further, I put out what would be one episode every 2 days.
Which is fucking insane. I don't know how you do it. I have no idea how the fuck you do it.
I stopped. That's why. Not my watch.
I'm sure that got to be a lot to deal with.
I mean, I stopped, and within like 3 days of stopping, my youngest child was like, "Dada?" I was like, "Yeah, that's right." It's like, I do exist. You do have a father. I'm only joking. No, as listen, there's a balance to be found in the workplace, and going back and putting yourself through education and all the rest will mean that when you come out of that, you have qualifications that will allow you to apply for other jobs, but this time more in the field that you want and more kind of setting the boundaries that you want as well, which will be a huge difference for you, man.
Yep, that was kind of the whole idea as far as all that goes. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'll be in my 40s by the time I graduate with like a fucking bachelor's degree. I am the old fuck in like all of these. Well, in like even just being at work, I see like the I don't want to peek behind the curtain too far about fucking just gave away where the fuck I work, but yes, in my classes I am the old bastard in every sense and term. And like, yeah, My older brother put it, he's like, "You're basically competing against like children. Like, yeah, this shouldn't be that fucking hard. Like, you've got enough life experience at this point that you should probably know a lot of this shit." Yeah.
How do you do, fellow children?
I'm not 36 years old. I'm not old enough to be your parents, practically. But anyway, yeah, the work's been good. I've been listening to a shit ton of fucking podcasts. I listen to your stuff pretty regularly. I'm on the Legion Patreon. I give them a couple bucks a month so I can listen to the Cinema PsyOps boys with the actual music in the episode and all the other good shit that's on there. Have you ever listened to the Soundtracker podcast?
No.
It is fucking excellent, and I think you'd love it because you're right around that age that you bought a lot of these soundtracks back in the day on a compact disc. And same with me, like he's covered. That's Eric Peacock. He was one of the first people I've ever followed on Twitter just because he's such a fucking snarky asshole. He always makes me laugh. But yeah, he's got a podcast called Soundtracker Podcast. I definitely recommend checking that out. It's
following that right now.
Is real good. I'm always looking for podcast recommendations because I inevitably like burn through, you know, I need 40 hours of fucking listening shit like per week. So, you know, I'll jump on Spotify if I'm feeling frisky or, you know, I need to pump up the jams a little bit while I'm doing shit. But always on the lookout for some podcast.
I'm always like, my problem is I kind of went off everything except like podcasts that talk about misery and true crime. It's all I listen to, like literally all I listen to, and that is my life. I don't listen to anything. I subscribe to all my friends' podcasts so they get that download from me every week, but I can't remember the last time I listened to anything like made, produced by anyone that I know. like at all. It's all like this 6-part mini investigation into this horrific murder, and I'm like, oh, that just got my dick hard. Let's do this. That's my world. That's the lane that I exist in. Or just pure travesties of justice that anger my blood and then just put me in a shitty mood for the rest of the week. That's the lane I like to drive in, Mark. Like to get
some anger porn.
100% just rage porn, listening to people like not get caught for blatantly obvious crimes. I'm trying to think, like, in my world, the only thing I've done is Fright Fest. So 11 movies, some like good, some okay, and at least one horrifically terrible. That Winnie the Pooh movie, utter shit. Utter shit.
I was just talking about that with somebody last night. They're like, you rushed right out and went and saw that, didn't you, Mark? I was like, well, I don't think it was playing at all in my entire fucking state. And everybody that I know that saw it said it was a fucking horrible piece of
Anyone,
shit.
Like, I've read a couple of things where people are like that. Yeah, it's not as bad as you thought it was. All I'm going to say is, if it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, your expectations for that movie were so fucking low they couldn't be measured. That was worse than I expected. I was expecting a bad movie. I come out of that actually saying that given the choice between the Winnie the Pooh movie or Terrifier, I would watch Terrifier, and that is a movie I fucking hate. Oh, it's just as awful. It's absolutely... I mean, at least Terrifier, I'm not trying to defend that movie in any way, shape, or form, had practical effects. This is all bad
CG. Way less cynical, too. Like, I mean, just the point of view that they made that Winnie the Pooh movie from feels very asylum and very, very cynical. They're like, it's public domain.
As soon as it went public domain, they are currently shooting the sequel right now, and they are working on a Bambi and a Peter Pan as well. The Bambi one is the only one that sounds great, and if you gave me like 5 days to hash out a story, I could write a bitch. I'm not even a writer, but I could write a bitching story. It's basically, it's like a vengeance movie that they're talking about. So like Bambi goes to hunt down the people that killed her parents. And that,
how
to
the
me
fuck are you gonna do that and have it not be all animated?
Well, this is the problem. Like, all they do is they put horrible masks on the Winnie the Pooh thing. It's just the worst masks you've ever seen in your entire life, and just burly men walking around wearing these fucking masks. It's terrible.
Man, you think the Bambi thing is going to be the same thing? It's going to be probably like some like stripper looking chick with a deer mask 100%, on.
100%.
Oh, dude.
Yeah,
I don't want this.
This is the lane that we operate in. So that was the worst movie I saw. The best movie I saw was Onyx the Fortuitous and the Talisman of Souls.
I saw your Letterboxd review on that, and that title definitely grabs me.
So you may be aware of the character of Onyx without knowing you're aware of the character of Onyx. It's a guy called Andrew Bowser, and he has this online persona called Onyx, who has been appearing for about the last 10 years on like viral videos on YouTube, where he appears as a weird kind of goofy Satanist at like proper news events where he's interviewed as a Satanist, and he gives these long-winded, very over-the-top...
Oh, I know the dude. Was he like the Arby's guy or something?
Yes.
Okay, yes, I know the exact guy.
Well, this is his feature movie, and it's fucking awesome. It's like, the way to describe it is, the character he plays, the way I've described it to people is, if Napoleon Dynamite spoke like a evangelical preacher. So it's all like, and I walk through the valley of death and notice me, senpai. You know, it's all this sort of thing. And then the movie is like an ode to 80s, but it's not like, it's not like Stranger Things shot like an 80s movie. It's just they've done proper creature effects where they built actual creatures and animatronics and all the rest, and went down this gnarly sort of style of making movies. It's a horror comedy for sure. It has Barbara Crampton and it has Jeffrey Combs. Jeffrey Combs has a huge part in it. He's fucking amazing. And it is riddled with things that will make you almost wet yourself with laughter. It is fucking amazing. And it had its debut at Sundance. And it did so well at the midnight screen at Sundance that they actually put on a second showing. So the movie's going to go well. Like, this dude, this dude is going to do really, really well. So there was that. A little movie called Little Bone Lodge, which will be out sometime this year, is also one that you should keep on your radar. It stars Julie Richardson, who has been in shitloads of things from Event Horizon to Nip Tuck and all the rest. And she plays... it's like two guys on the run... from committing a crime, crashed their vehicle and one of them was injured, and it's a bad storm, and they stumble upon a small remote farmhouse in the Scottish Highlands, and Julie Richardson's in there with her daughter and her invalid husband, and right from the off, something's not right. and that's all I'll say. It's twisty, it's turny, it's directed by the dude that did Cockneys versus Zombies, which didn't equate to me because this is not a funny movie. It's like very, very, very dark. It was excellent. And then another couple that, you know, I thought were like pretty good. Here for Blood is a riot and you will love it. Low budget Canadian horror splatter movie, all starring essentially wrestlers. The main guy is fucking awesome. The main guy is a professional wrestler who I don't know, but he's kind of a Rowdy Roddy Piper-esque sort of guy. And there's a satanic cult trying to break in and abduct a kid that he's babysitting. And I'll leave it at that. It's fucking great. I saw it. I loved it all the way through it. And all I could think in the back of my head is Mark is going to love this movie when he sees it. So yeah, it was good overall. Like I say, the Winnie the Pooh movie was a known quantity going in, and it wasn't good. So
One dud out of that many. That's pretty good.
Yeah, the rest of it went okay. A couple of movies like were very middle of the road, and that's fine. There was nothing exceptional this year. In the previous years, there's been at least one movie that I'm like, this, like Tigers Are Not Afraid or Saint Maud or something like that, where I'm literally like jaw on the floor going, well, I've just found my favourite movie of the year. I didn't see anything like that, but overall the quality was good, so... And that's all we can ask for. And speaking about overall qualities being good, let's talk about... No, I'm all joking. We've got two movies to discuss on this episode today for you. We're doing Dawn of the Mummy from 1981 and Scream for Vengeance. This is from 1980. One is like super difficult to get your hands on, which is Scream for Vengeance. We did manage to track it down.
On YouTube.
Yes, Dawn of the Mummy is relatively easy to get your hands on. But once again, I don't think either one of these movies in the UK anyway, speaking for my territory, have had any proper release at all since when they came out. So you're kind of trolling the internet for YouTube rips. Or favorable torrents.
I think Dawn of the Mummy had a Severin Blu-ray or something.
That would track. Severin have covered a ton of the movies on the tier 3 list, so that would kind of track. Scream for Vengeance, I imagine, hasn't though, because I can't find it anywhere. So
I think it had a DVD release a long time ago that's way the fuck out of print now. But yeah, Dawn of the Mummy is relatively easy to find. I watched it on... the fuck is it called? Freevee, which is basically just like Tubi. It's free shit with fucking ads in it, basically. But I think it's also on Amazon Prime, and I think I've seen it pop up on like Shudder or Screambox or one of those at some point. So yeah, that one's relatively both on YouTube. Also, if you follow me on YouTube, they're both in the video. I think it's called Video Nasty Playlist 3 or something. So grab those if you haven't seen them before the fucking YouTube bots scrub them.
The algorithm wipes them from existence. So we're going to do them in the order that I just mentioned. So we're going to do Dawn of the Mummy. We're going to take a short break. You're going to hear people from the Video Nasties doc give you a little intro. You're going to hear the trailer when we return. Myself and Mark Ball discussing that movie right after this.
Okay, well, Dawn of the Mummy. Now, possibly the greatest trash aesthetic is monsters versus models. And this film has it in spades. So basically, there's Beauty and the Beast. Amanda Tesorio did it very well in the third Blind Dead film, Horror of the Zombies. But essentially what you have here is a gored-up version of a mummy movie by Frank Agrama, who was the Egyptian director of the film. He actually shot this in Egypt. And what he did was, the story is essentially, as like a lot of mummy films is, you have a flashback to 3,000 years ago, and you have a pharaoh being buried with a lot of his slaves, and a curse being put upon it, saying anyone who disturbs this will, you know, come a cropper, essentially. And of course, what happens is, in 1981, you have some grave robbers, and you also have some models flown over from New York. So they turn up in flares and early 80s fashions, and the grave robbers find the tomb. They open it up, and then by a stroke of luck, well, actually, probably not luck, bad luck, the photographer decides, actually, that'd be a great place to shoot a fashion shoot. So what they do is they go in there, and the lights basically bring back the pharaoh to life. And it ends in a climactic scene in an Egyptian town where, again, very Fulci-esque, Romero-esque scene where an Egyptian wife in a wedding banquet, literally... the wife becomes the wedding banquet, and as they pull back the curtain, there she is, with entrails being pulled out, kind of a fiery climax, with the models throwing Molotov cocktails at a 7-foot zombie Pharaoh, which is not the kind of thing you see every day. I do love this film. I mean, it's a shameless rip-off of the Romero and the Fulci films. And Frank Agrama, he made lots of films, I think, in Egypt back in the day. And I think this is probably his only horror movie, because he also made Queen Kong back in 1976, which, of course, is a horror but in a completely different way, as I'm sure if you've ever seen that, you'll know. And Frank Agrama said with the film, say he was looking back, he shot it, most of it was actually shot in Egypt. And so for a low-budget film, had fantastic locations. But what he said, one of the problems actually with shooting in Egypt at the time was gore was no problem at all, but nudity was a problem. And so all of the actresses basically kept their tops on, which is not the kind of thing you would expect in a film of this type. And he said that was the one thing that they couldn't do, was like topless nudity in the film. But essentially, it's a very, very gory film, and even a bit better for it. And it's a great trash aesthetic. You've just basically got beautiful women being chased by monsters, and what more could you ask for? With Dawn of the Mummy, essentially, yes, it was probably the extreme gore that got it noticed. It's really far too silly to be offensive in any way, shape or form. But of course, back in the early 80s, or even into the mid to late 80s, then people got worked up over much less. So yes, it's probably the gore in this that certainly saw it being fingered by the long arm of the law. And Dawn of the Mummy, of course, was put out by Video Space, also put out, of course, Evil Speak, a notorious Video Nasty. So again, that may have been one of the reasons why it was nobbled by the boys in blue.
Egypt, land of the pyramids, a nice place to visit.
Now I'm going to be clear sailing all the way.
But would you want to die there? Dawn of the Mummy. Seferamun, ancient pharaoh of Egypt, has slept for 3,000 years.
A mummy in an undiscovered tomb.
Only now to be awakened by invaders searching for his forbidden treasure. Dawn of the Mummy. What terror have these young Americans brought upon themselves? How will they escape the Pharaoh's deadly wrath? His armies rising from beneath the ageless sands to avenge their master's honor. No one is safe. Nothing can stop him. There is nowhere to hide. They just keep coming. Armies of the living dead, thirsting for blood. They are everywhere, and their quest for vengeance knows no limits. Can try to stop them.
No!
But you can't escape from the Dawn of the Mummy.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for Dawn of the Mummy. This is directed by Frank Agrama, based on the screenplay by Daria Price, Ronald Dobrin, and Frank Agrama. The movie itself stars Brenda Seymour Schneider, which is kind of funny. It sounds like a
lot of names.
Is it like Seymour Schneider sounds like an uppercut that a character from Street Fighter would say?
Sounds like a really complicated drink to make that bartenders fucking hate.
Oh, not the Seymour Schneider. Oh, no.
Christ, which is first, the Schneider or the Schleimer?
Barry Sattles, George Peck, John Salvo, Ibram Khan, Joan Levy, Ellen Fazon, and Diane, Betty. There are some other folks in here, but we ain't going into that. Synopsis for this one is a group of fashion models disturb the tomb of the mummy of a mummy and retrieve an ancient curse. Along with the mummy rising, slaves who were buried in the desert thousands of years before also rise with a craving for human flesh. So, Brendan Fraser and crew, Brendan Fraser with his Oscar and crew show up.
Rachel Wise.
I'll make my pitch for this movie. I didn't hate this movie at all, right? But my issue with it overall was this took a long time to get going for me. Once it got going, it has some pretty gnarly practical. In fact, this went a little bit gnarlier than I actually expected it to go in terms of kind of gore effects. Like proper munchy crunchy sort of effects in this one for sure, which did make me smile. But like the whole setup is fucking nonsense, and you kind of have to wade through that to get to the back half. But once you get to that back half, it's surprisingly enjoyable, low rent fare. I mean, it's in some respects it reminded me of a kind of lower tier kind of Italian zombie movie than necessarily did like a traditional The Mummy sort of movie. And the pacing's off. Like I say, like that first half is just a lot of story that doesn't aid anything, a lot of dialogue that's not particularly well written, and a lot of beats that kind of felt like, let's get this going. But if you can wade through that, if you can get past that lip into like the last 30 minutes, it's enjoyable enough. I mean, like I have sat through movies in this list already that you feel like you're going to get a payoff and no payoff comes, and at least this one gave us the payoff. So I enjoyed that aspect about it. I think it's got a weird kind of sense of, like, it strangely leans into some more of the kind of almost the horror effects than I actually expected. Like mummies, I've said many times and at times kind of more famously in front of Mark, that mummy movies don't really do much for me. The mummy as an entity is a pretty boring entity. It's like a shite zombie, you know, like it's not an interesting zombie. It's not a zombie like with anything other than really slow movement, like slower than an actual zombie movement. And if you're watching the old Universal ones, force chokes, which are pretty shit. Or if you're watching
walking around force choking cunts,
that's literally it. That's the Universal Mummy. By the time you get into the Hammer Mummy, it's not much better. And then by the time you go into later ones, notwithstanding that amazing Tom Cruise movie that didn't derail and sink the Dark Universe by any stretch of the imagination, even by the time you get to the Brendan Fraser ones, which are probably the most popular ones, even then, he's not really doing anything. It's just a bunch of CGI effects of like plagues of this and that, and so it's not an exciting character. And this one, they at least like give me what I kind of want, which is the kind of zombie thing. It really is it's a glorified zombie movie, and that works for it. It's like I say, low rent, fairly cheaply made, but the effects on the undead are reminiscent of Italian zombie movies, like the maybe not the higher tier ones, but the kind of mid tier ones. And on that level, it's entertaining enough. I don't know how quickly I'd rush back to it, if I'm honest. But I'm kind of glad that I saw it, because when we were reading about it, like a couple of weeks ago, I was like, yeah, this has the possibility of being another episode of two completely shit movies that I wish I'd done anything differently of, you know, like accidentally nick my nuts at during a manscaping. Like, I mean, like anything other than sitting like, you know, then splash some cologne on it just for extra pain. But I didn't get that with this one. I did kind of feel myself in the first half of the movie feeling like this could be like a wet blanket. And then by the end of it, I wasn't exactly going masterpiece and standing up and giving it a round of applause, but by the end of it, I thought, at least I was entertained. How did you get on with Dawn of the Mummy? Watching the back half of this movie, I was like, there's a lot in here that I imagine you would have enjoyed.
Yeah, so I watched this twice, partially because we had the recordings kind of delayed and spread out a little bit, and partially because I needed to confirm in my mind, I was like, does this movie actually fucking slap? Yeah. And upon second watch, indeed, this movie fucking slaps. Yeah, the first 20 minutes of this is like fucking atrocious. I really had no idea like where this was going exactly or why. I mean, you get in the first like 5 minutes of some disembowelment. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, doing the whole thing with the mummy being laid to rest. So there's some gruesome shots in the first like 5 minutes of them pulling his guts out and fucking draining his blood and stuff. So right there, I was like, okay, that might be it for this movie. Like, that might be enough for the censors to have shitballed this one. But then, yeah, once you get past like the fucking first like half of this or so, it really starts fucking picking up steam quick. And yeah, upon the second watch, the first chunk of this goes, you can just not pay attention to fucking any of it, basically. And it goes by pretty quick. This is only about 90 minutes, I'm pretty sure. And yeah,
oh yeah, it's an hour and a half. Yeah.
The last half hour of this thing turns into a full-blown fucking Fulci movie. There is like throats getting ripped out. For some reason, I even watching this twice, I couldn't figure out why we jump all of a sudden from like out at the tomb, where like it's out in the middle of the desert, basically, where, you know, our asshole main characters that are like after the goal, they just want to loot the fucking treasure from this place, and the treasure is also super adorable when they come to that. I've seen mm-hmm. better gold pieces in community theater fucking acts. They just literally spray painted a bunch of crap they had laying around with gold paint, but it's a low budget thing, so I'm willing to cut it a little bit of slack. But yeah, I could never figure out why we all of a sudden changed from being out there to like in a town. Basically, I feel like there's a scene that got cut there somewhere that it shows them being like, well, we should probably get the fuck out of here and go to this town that's nearby.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines.
I also get the feeling that it may have been shot at different times.
Different movies, maybe.
Yeah, like a case of like maybe they had a couple of weeks in between shoots and just didn't have access to where they'd shot before. Because it is, it's jarring.
That's possible.
You know, it's a jarring change, which to me, like if you're this shows the guerrilla filmmaking at play here. Like any like professional filmmaker would be like that. All we need to do is just have a character say something. You know, like just as a transition.
One line.
Like, but not this movie.
You can even do it in voiceovers, like shoot a Jeep driving in a fucking sandy parking lot and being like, well, Tyler, we might as well pack it up for the day and get the fuck away from this mummy mm-hmm. that's ripping people's throats out and going to this town so he's got a lot more throats to rip out. Because that's pretty much what that, you know, the location change does, is ups our body count by fucking a lot of fucking people. Because yeah, this has not only like a 7 foot tall mummy that rips people's fucking, he doesn't have Jedi powers, he's doing it the old school way, and he just like grabs you by the throat and pulls your fucking cords out. Mm-hmm. There's a awesome fucking shot where he goes to a butcher shop and fucking meat cleavers a dude like to the front of the head, and it's very Friday the 13th, like if they were actually allowed to get away with all the gore and shit. And then yeah, there's also zombies in this fucking movie, like for some reason. I'm sure there's one line that explains that about how he can like raise the dead or something. There's some really terrible fucking exposition in this movie. A lot of it given by the like she's not, I know it's a slur, but she's not a gypsy, but she's kind of like the Egyptian equivalent of that. She's a woman that's been like kind of outcast into the desert, that's constantly screaming about the fucking mummy's tomb and how they're gonna, you know, bring him back. And indeed they are right. And she thinks, you know, we get the whole scene where she thinks the mummy's gonna be cool with her and she's gonna get to be his wife or whatever, and just gets fucking choked and bent over fucking backwards like a folding chair. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like in this movie, man. Like, yeah, you're totally right. The first like chunk, the story just does not fucking matter in this at all. Like, yeah. It's very much like a slasher movie in that sense, that like all these characters are just there to get fucking horribly murdered at some point, and you don't really care about any of them. But that's fine, because the carnage in this is fucking beautiful and amazing. And yeah, I would love to. They need to do like a fucking 4K version of this, because I think the one they got is just like a standard 2K scan that Severin put out. But yeah, I'd love to see this in like, you know, full fucking restored color. All the carnage is good as you can see it.
I think there's a preconditioned audience for this now because those kind of late 70s, early 80s Italian zombie movies are super popular now. Like, people love them. That I feel like Dawn of the Mummy sits off to the side waiting for a fan base to find it. Let's talk some grades here then, because it sounds like both me and you actually had quite a bit of fun with this one. But how does all those gnarly gore effects translate to the rating that we give? Now, on Doing the Nasty, we do things slightly different. We base them more on kind of criminal sentencing. With the worst of the worst, that is your eye spits on your graves and your last houses on your lefts. Those get hard time. The grade underneath that is a little bit of community service. Those are the ones that are bad, but not as bad. Then ones that are kind of straying into gnarly waters are the old slap on the wrists, and those movies that don't do anything to offend anyone are case dismissed. Now, generally, I've said before, to me, because it's a supernatural entity, on that level, I would generally case dismiss almost anything, because it's not real. It's clearly not real. It's different when, like, people are creating violence on other people. That being said, some of the effects in this are fucking gnarly. So I'm going to go with the old slap on the wrist here. I do think there is a level of enjoyment for this one if you hang with it. This is the sort of movie you can fuck around with your phone, have a few beers, chat to your friends while it's on. But as soon as the killing kicks off, you guys are all going to be sitting watching it, high-fiving and having a good time. So it's a slap on the wrist for me for Dawn of the Mummy. Where are you coming in, Mark?
I think, yeah, in good conscience, I gotta give it at least a slap on the wrist, because it does. I was surprised at how gnarly this gets towards the end, and it toes this really weird line, like a lot of these movies do, and, like, you know, I could bring up Fulci, but he was great about where it's like cartoonish levels of violence and like bloodshed and shit, but it's done realistically, kind of like. So I don't know. I bet this was pretty fucking shocking to the censors back then. And like, even if they, you know, like I said, it's got stuff in the first 5 minutes, but like, if they actually stayed awake through like the shitty first third of this to get to the ending, I'm sure they were pretty fucking shocked. And this was a pretty easy one for them to be like, nope, this is too intense for people, even though it's a fucking mummy, which don't exist, and the zombies, which also don't exist. Yeah. Like, which, yeah, makes it kind of ludicrous that they think this would, you know, warp people's minds or whatever, because it is very cartoonish. And but yeah, it goes pretty fucking hard in the paint. We got severed heads and people getting chopped and throats ripped out and fucking, I think there's titties at some point. And, mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd go slap on the wrist. This movie fucking rules. I am kind of shocked that a lot of people don't really talk about this as much. Like, I remember the cover of this, and I had kind of heard about it in passing, but I don't really hear a whole lot of people like singing the praises of this one for whatever reason.
There we go. Right, we have another movie to get to. This one is the slightly more obscure Scream for Vengeance, aka Vengeance. You're going to hear an introduction to it from the Video Nasties podcast. Not podcast, the Video Nasties documentary. See, podcast in the brain, Mark. The Draconian Days video. Has anyone got, like, can you still readily buy that?
You could the last time I checked. It's also streaming in a couple places.
Oh,
I
think it's on Tubi. Yeah. I always forget that, because I always point people to it, and then I keep forgetting that. It's just not, because it's a DVD, it might just not be available. So as long as people can get their hands on it out there, should check it out. It's fucking awesome. But yeah, you're gonna hear them talk about it, and then hopefully a trailer, and then we're gonna come back and talk about it. Scream for Vengeance, right after this.
Everyone has a boiling point, then comes the ellipsis, Scream for Vengeance, with an exclamation mark. It's pretty much what you'd expect. There's a sort of Last House on the Left vibe going on here. It's about bank robbers who are also rapists, and they do some bad things to some people, and the good guys sort of turn things around and do away with them. This is actual vengeance taking place here on the cover. The most obscure of these films, for justifiable reasons. not anybody would really remember. I suppose it works hard to be kind of queasily unpleasant. It has those villains rather like Last House on the Left or Fight for Your Life or Death Weekend. They work really hard on coming up with characters who are thoroughly depraved and nasty, but they also seem to be deeply stupid. You know, they obviously are asking for trouble, and it's only the fact that the people they run into are so generally feeble that means they get to be evil for a full hour before the half an hour of screaming vengeance descends upon them, ending their reign of terror. It's one of those things that's made far away from the population centres of America and indeed the talent centres of the American film industry. Stars people you don't know, directed by somebody who never seemed to work again, Bob Bliss, or Bob Blizz, as he is on his IMDb page. It's a release that feels required to tell you the entire story of the film on the back. This was quite common in the video era, where they would just take the synopsis that was written for the record for the American Film Institute or the Monthly Film Bulletin and glue it here. I mean, doesn't really help if when you bring the thing home from the video rental store, you already know the end because it's written here. But then again, maybe for those of you who, you know, watched the first couple of minutes and then decided to fast forward through the walking around bits between the rape and the torture and the vengeance, it served as a useful guide. Doesn't seem to have had any major lasting cult appeal. Few people may well dimly remember it from their youth. I couldn't honestly say that I remembered it and I had seen it before. I think that this is the sort of thing that every video shop had loads of copies of films like this, and you finally rent it out when everything you'd wanted to see had gone.
Scream for Vengeance, a brutal story torn from today's headlines involving innocent people at the mercy of sadistic killers. Their only hope for survival, to fight for their very existence.
Straight line, we'll get lost.
We can't outrun them, they're gonna kill us!
Lost, intimidated, assaulted beyond human limits, and hunted like wild animals. Scream for Vengeance, a story of retribution and revenge.
Some more, huh?
Kill him!
That's right, bitch! And you're next.
Everyone has a boiling point. Scream for Vengeance.
And welcome back. So this is Scream for Vengeance from 1980, written and directed by the enigma that is Bob Bliss, a guy who doesn't appear to exist.
He's dark, man.
I think I read an article about, was it last week? Where basically people were like, yeah, like for all intents and purposes, this guy doesn't exist. You cannot, he's not there. he's potentially done like the I think he did an interview or something a few years ago, but that's about it. He's
it's not like a Jess Franco thing where Bob Bliss is one of his many aliases or something.
Don't know. There's very little information on him at all, and this movie is very little seen, to be fair. This is one of these ones that's not had a full-on kind of lovingly fucking stroked off in the shower release on any format out with the VHS. I don't think it ever got a DVD release, certainly has never had a Blu-ray release. So it's one that just kind of exists in a small bubble with kind of ripped versions of it out there. I dare say it will have had a DVD release somewhere. I mean, but yeah, it's just that, like, it's one of those movies that's just very, 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 very difficult to get your hands on it. And I'm not entirely sure why, because there's a lot worse I've seen, like, transferred the DVD and Blu-ray. This is written and directed by Bob Bliss. It stars Walter Addison, Leonard Belove, Bob Elliott, Susie Gardner, Nicholas Jacques, Sally Lockett, Jane McMahon, R.E. Rudebush, and Steve Searcy. The synopsis for this one is: four hoodlums break into a jeweler's house and brutally murder him, his wife, and daughter. On the run, they kidnap Jenny, a senator's granddaughter, and her boyfriend, but discover that the two will not be taken easily. In the melee that follows, the gang are blown away one by one until the final vengeful confrontation between Jenny and the remaining gang member. How did you get on with this one, Mark?
So I'm trying to... This one I only watched once, and I watched this a couple weeks ago, and I'm kind of confusing stuff that happens in this one with stuff that happens on the next episode.
Yeah,
one of those movies.
Yeah,
they're very, very similar. They're kind of like home invasion that turned into like a cat and mouse kind of fucking... They're two different movies, kind of, but yeah, there's... I just remember lots of rape in both these and the threat of rape being everywhere. This one, it occurs pretty early on.
It occurs early on and off screen. That's the weird thing about it. Like, this is a kind of quasi rape revenge movie to an extent, where the element that would generally be in this movie, which would generally put it on the list, is actually off screen.
And
which,
like,
is so
pretty
bizarre.
Much all done with voiceover. Like, the voiceover in this one was like the worst part. There's a long. A long scene where a dude is just like, basically he's in a ski mask and he's just talking about what he's gonna do to this girl, and yeah. It's like, it's almost more upsetting than like what the fuck was that movie, Demented, where yeah. Like it shows everything, but it's like done like in a really weird fashion. This movie felt threatening. Like, it's,
yeah,
like threatening the audience, especially, like, kind of. And yeah, I don't know, like, that's almost all I remember from this movie. I don't remember. I know there's some cat and mouse stuff, like, throughout the like out in the woods and shit, and it's definitely like, it's shot very cheap. I remember the cinematography in this looked pretty good, though. Like, I'm pretty sure I remember reading that this played at a few film festivals when this came out, and was kind of like, you know, the critics actually like really liked this movie and like respected the balls on it for how hard it goes, but clearly the censors did not agree. And this is kind of one of those ones where, like, I'm like, I can kind of fully understand why this, like, freaked people out at the time, especially. But I don't know. Yeah, it has that weird juxtaposition of also being like a, you know, a festival thing that people dug at the time. So I don't know. I didn't enjoy this so much. Like, we've definitely seen way worse than this, but yeah, I don't think I'd ever watch this again, probably.
Yeah, I got on okay with it. I think, and I don't know how much of it was I expected it to go gnarlier than it did. You're right, I think that what the movie excels is the threat of violence over the delivery. The actual delivery of violence in the movie is so-so, especially for the time period, for 1980, and a lot of that's budgetary, but the actual kind of the imposing menace of the movie from the four hoodlums themselves is surprisingly well done. I also think that the, like, and you touched on it, it was one of the things that really kind of struck me is it does kind of feel like a weirdly kind of low budget art house movie at times. Like some of the shot composition is surprisingly well done for its budget. It's just the tech that they're shooting on is not there to keep up with it. The acting pretty much across the board is bad though, which is like one of the things that kept taking me out of it. Some of the more menacing lines didn't resonate because they were coming out of the mouth of some morons. So I was kind of a little bit out there, and it never went as nasty as I thought it was gonna, which is weird. Like, I'm not usually a cheerleader for rape or violence by any stretch of the imagination in cinema, but there is a point where you have an expectation of where things are going because we've watched a lot of these sort of movies recently, that I just expected it to lean more into that, and it was surprisingly more depth with the way they handled it without giving it. The depth of the viewing overall came from the fact that it didn't go there. It is grossly overlong though, which is the biggest issue here. This one, very similar to Dawn of the Mummy, is about an hour and a half long, and the viewing experience for this felt like double the length. And a lot of that is because they're having to pad it with voiceovers or exposition and not necessarily give you the kind of meats and bones that, like, a movie like Dawn of the Mummy doesn't need to have great acting because the practical effects are there to carry you through. I don't have a huge amount to say about this one. Yes, it's very difficult to get your hands on, but then at the same time, I don't know if this got released on Blu-ray tomorrow, even from a completionist point of view of getting the nasties on Blu-ray, I don't know how quick this would be on my, oh well, I need to make sure I get a copy of that list. It's fine for what it is. It has some elements that make it quite interesting, specifically, like I say, in the cinematography and the actual threat content as opposed to delivery. But overall, it's not like I won't be like 2 months from now like remembering much about Scream for Vengeance. It's just not going to happen. It's going to get lost very, very quickly amongst other movies. And you're right, in the next episode when we do Beast with a Gun, aka whatever the fucking aka on that one is,
that's like 20 titles. Mad Dog Killer.
Yeah, like Street Killers. When we get to that one, which is the Italian Puzzatesi one, you see that the Italians, like, and this is a couple of years before this one was made, like, they are not the same way when it comes to, maybe we should do some stuff off camera and have the threat of violence. No, it's all on camera. I don't know. I come away from this one kind of like, huh. And that was literally it. It wasn't bad. I didn't dislike it, but I don't think it was like, I think it was overshadowed by a movie that knew how to hit my gnarly little gore spot quite well. And that was Dawn of the Mummy. Like, watched as a double bill, Dawn of the Mummy is infinitely better. So that's all I can really say. Well, when you come up, because we've talked about this, like, it's threats of violence without necessarily delivering out and out gore and violence. So from a kind of rating point of view, where do you come in with Scream for Vengeance?
This is kind of one where, like, and the censors do this shit all the fucking time, like, if there's not one particular thing in this movie that you can kind of like zoom in on as like being like super offensive, you just say that like it's the overall tone of the thing that bothers me. And that's kind of where I come with this one. Like it's pretty just gritty, ugly fucking exploitation movie that you don't really get any kind of joy out of. So I gotta go at least a slap on the wrist. I'm tempted to give this guy a little bit of community service because, you know, the threat of rape is also something that bothers me a lot in movies. So I'd probably go like a little bit of community service. I actually went and looked up my fucking Letterboxd review of this just to kind of jostle the cobwebs out of my fucking brain on this one. And what I gave this 2 stars, and what I wrote is, like if Straw Dogs and Last House on the Left had a baby, an angry, ugly, at times badly directed shot and edited baby. And I kind of remembered there's a lot of really terrible fucking screen direction going on in the beginning of this movie. Like, I may not have noticed it as much, like, once this, like, kind of picks up steam and, like, you know, especially, yeah, the scene that we were, like, kind of alluding to towards the beginning of it. The first chunk of this has a lot of shit where people are, like, looking at the wrong fucking side of the screen when they're supposed to be talking to somebody that's, like, you know, on their left or right, and they're looking the opposite way. There's a ton of that going on in the beginning of this, and it fucking was annoying the shit out of me. So, yeah, maybe this one isn't that great shot and edited. I may be confusing it with the fucking Mad Dog Killer again.
Yeah, like I say, it has a kind of gnarly, gritty art house feel to me. It reminded me, like, of really early Abel Ferrara movies. Just like, and that, like, the intensity is coming almost from the camera as well as the acting. I would go slap on the wrists. I don't think there's enough in here to elevate it amongst other movies of a similar ilk that I've given Community Service to. And I wouldn't rush out to check it out again. But I'm glad that once again, for completion's sake, we've watched it, and in some cases, so you guys don't have to. And because it's quite hard to get a hold of anyway, like, there's no impetus to really rush out there and check it out anyway. Right, let's bring this. Well, we flew through this episode, dude. That's what I'm talking about. We've got another one to record right after that, and that is not the reason we flew through this at all, even a little bit. We're going to close out this episode right after this.
This is a test of the emergency podcasting system. Listen to the Psychosemantic Podcast. Politics, movies, and political movies. Find us on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher, LegionPodcasts.com. The Psychosemantic Podcast.
And you've been listening to Doing the Nasty Podcast. Ladies and gents, this has been Season 2, Episode 34, with reviews of A Dawn of the Mummy and Scream for Vengeance. For you guys, in but a week's time, for us, immediately after this, we will be recording a episode looking at Alice, Sweet Alice, aka Communion, and Beast with a Gun, aka Street Killers. I'm looking forward to this, because I have said it many times before, I love the fact that Alice, Sweet Alice is basically an American Giallo. I mean, it's like, for this, that's as simple what it is. And we get to talk about a Polizia Teschi movie, so it kind of feels like a double Italian bill, even though one is clearly not Italian. So that's what we'll be doing. In the interim, though, Mark, you're a busy dude. You've got stuff out there that people can purchase, or places that people can come out and support you, so pimp your wares.
Music. I've been going hard on the music. I got two shows coming up in April. I don't know when this episode's gonna post exactly, but if you're in or around the Billings, Montana, or Casper, Wyoming region of the United States, come out and see me play. Or it would be super cool if you went to check out my albums on Bandcamp. There's two of them. I got another one that's like 40% written or so. I'm hoping to have that fucker out by May. But we'll see how that goes. That's fancymark.bandcamp.com. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Those are both the Fancy Mark. I was on a Psychosemantic cast not too long ago talking about X and Pearl, which I saw that Pearl finally fucking came out in the UK like a year later for some weird reason.
Yeah, it's now officially out over the weekend. I go and see it tomorrow.
But yeah, we did a double feature on Darren's show of X and Pearl, and I talked a lot about the Hays Code and censorship and the early days of pornography. A lot of stuff that kind of ties to this show. Like, if you like hearing about this stuff on the show, definitely go check out that episode, because we talked for, I think, like about 2 hours about both those movies, and a lot of it is about, you know, like movies and the fringe edge of cinema that I like a lot. So go check those out. Also, when's that Candyman retro gonna be? Is that coming out sometime in April, probably?
No, end of this month, I think, if I can get everything lined up right.
Okay, I don't know if you've done the draw for that yet, but I am on one of those, which is exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be be
maybe
good.
I haven't seen Candyman 2 or 3, I don't think so.
You're I mean, you're doing yourself a grave injustice not seeing Candyman 2. Candyman 3, eh.
I remember you talking about him on like Duncan Defends or something.
I did part 3 on Duncan Defends, and if you remember, the best I could get to defend that was rip off an Undertaker promo from WWE. So,
oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
that was it. That was a reach for that one, because that movie is hot fucking garbage. And
well, maybe I'll get that one. It'll be entertaining, and I won't have to watch it again after that.
Right, ladies and gents, thank you for checking out this episode. We'll be back in a week's time for more Doing the Nasty. Until then, from Mark and myself, we will speak to you next time.
Nasty. They were called Nasties, and they were nasty.
Some of the things that we've seen are so horrific.
These films not only affect young people, but I believe they affect adults as well.
An extravaganza of gory violence, capable of depraving and corrupting those who watched it.
I have never seen a video, mister. I wouldn't. I actually don't need to see what I know is in that film.